Hello and welcome to the Pots and Trowels podcast with me, Martin Fish. And again, I've got Sean and Jill with me.
Hello.
And we're going to talk loads today, haven't we? We've got some interesting guests, some questions, lots and lots happening today.
You've been out and about quite a lot, actually, Martin, haven't you? Yeah. And we've got some questions.
We have.
We've got a question in from one of our listeners. And also, you've been asking people to ask questions, haven't you?
We have, yeah. We went to Barnard Castle, didn't we?
We did. We did a talk up there, didn't we? Well, you did.
Yes. Lovely group there. U3A group. Big group. It was in a theatre, really, wasn't it? It was quite interesting doing the talk with all these people in tiered seats. So, yeah, I loved it. Loved it.
What's the eyesight like up there? I can't resist making some kind of... No politics. Step away from the politics.
We were a bit pushed for time, but I could do with an eye test, to be honest. So, yes, I should have done it at the same time. That was good to be up there. And if we've got time at the end, just a few jobs, because the weather here has turned. We were very mild last week, and then all of a sudden we've gone minus temperatures. So, yeah, you need to wrap up warm if you're outside in the garden.
It is crispy here. And at the end I'll ask you a question I had from a listener who wanted to know a question about what happens when the temperature drops, but about cyclamens. Yes. But we'll talk about that in a moment. So you've been out and about again, meeting some interesting gardening people, haven't you, Martin?
Yes, I caught up with a young head gardener. Well, I've come up to North Yorkshire today and I'm at Newby Hall, not far from Ripon, and I'm looking for Lawrence Wright, the head gardener, and I'm told he's in the garden somewhere. In fact, there he is, I can see him, so I'm just going to have a wander across to see him to find out what's happening in the garden at the moment. So, Lawrence, hello.
Hi, Martin, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good to see you. So here we are, nearly the end of November. The garden is closed, of course, now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I see you've sort of broken down the fence and climbed in.
I'm good at climbing fences, so yes. And I knew you were going to be in the garden somewhere, because I can hear people, I think, are they leaf clearing?
Yeah, I mean, we've pretty much got all of the leaves down now, so the guys are busy doing that before the grass dies off underneath. So yeah. If you can hear anything in the background, that's what it is.
Yeah, no, not a problem. We don't want to stop anybody working. It's looking lovely, and it's quite a nice day today, quite a lot of blue sky. Guys, and lots of autumn colour still around, isn't it, really? It looks good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not been the best year. I think because we've had so many storms, the leaves have been ripped off quicker than they would normally be, and the colours haven't intensified as normal. But, I mean, what we've got is still pretty lovely, and it just makes you feel glad to be outside, doesn't it?
Absolutely, especially today. It's quite mild, certainly for the time of the year. So we're going to chat a bit more about the garden, but you've been head gardener here now for just over a year?
Two years.
So tell us how, because you're very young compared to somebody like me, how did you get into horticulture? How did it all start for you, Lawrence?
Purely by accident. When I was very young, and I'm talking 6 months, my mum went back to work. My dad worked full-time as well, and I got carted off to the grandparents, who were sort of ex-farming, but loved to grow their own vegetables, so they got an allotment. So from 6 months old, I was parked in a pushchair, and it was right from that point, really. And then school holidays, I was out with granddad helping in the allotment, and I never thought it would be a career. I went off to university to become a teacher and started, and thought, I don't want to do this. I'm doing this because I feel like I'm being pushed in that direction. And thought, what do I actually really enjoy doing? What do I want to spend, the next 40, 45 years doing? And fell back into gardening.
Oh, good. Well, that's good for... Shame for the teaching profession, because I think you would have made an excellent teacher, but you're also an excellent gardener and a head gardener here, of course. So where did you go to start work? Where's your sort of career path been to bring you up to Newby Hall?
So I started in retail, and I worked in a local garden centre, which was fantastic, because...
And this is Leicestershire you're from, isn't it?
This is Leicestershire, yeah. So I worked in a garden centre, and I think actually, right at the very bottom of, at the start of your career, it's a fantastic place, because you end up with so many weird and wonderful questions by people that know a little bit about gardening, a lot about gardening, and some people that just come in and they want some pansies because they're yellow and they're pretty in spring. So that's quite interesting. And then I did a college course, again in Leicestershire, studying horticulture, before moving up to Chatsworth, and I was a heebie-jeebie, which is Historic and Botanic Garden Bursary Scheme.
Okay.
Very proud to be a heebie-jeebie. It's a great scheme. And, that's fantastic immersion into a garden for a year, and you learn everything about that garden, but also it sort of really cuts your teeth in professional horticulture rather than sort of retail horticulture or nursery. went down to Wisley and joined the RHS as a student for 2 years, and then went into the real world and got a job in Cornwall on a private estate. I was there for 5 before sort of coming north and braving the cold.
Yeah, well, good pedigree there. And what a lovely place to be at the moment. I mean, Newby is a really lovely private garden. I think it's probably one of the best private gardens, certainly in the north of England, but it's high up there, isn't it, Newby? So you must have been delighted to get the job. And for those people that haven't been to Newby, and I'll take some pictures, but just describe what we're looking at.
So, right in the centre of the estate really sits the house, and it's an amazing, beautiful red brick Georgian building, reputedly designed by Sir Christopher Wren. So good pedigree straight in the building of the whole estate. And the garden around it is really the creation of the last 100 years. Up until that point, it was very much a parkland, think Capability Brown. And not really a garden to speak of. If you were here in exactly where we're stood in 1912, there would basically be nothing but trees and grass, and right down in the bottom corner of the garden, the beginnings of the rock garden being built. It wasn't really until the late 20s, early 30s that the garden that we see today was being laid out by the present owner's grandfather. And then it's 3 generations that have built sort of what we enjoy today.
Okay, and Lucinda Compton is the curator now, isn't she? So you work very closely with Lucinda.
Yeah, so, you know, she always says that, you know, she knows nothing about gardening and she's a complete amateur, which is, of course, a lie. She is very knowledgeable about, one, her garden, but two, gardening in general. And she's done her fair stint of training and education and volunteering at other gardens before she arrived here. I think she knew very early on that, you know, it was going to be something that she'd spend quite a lot of her time doing in the future. So she wanted to get her, you know, cut her teeth in the gardening world, really. So she's very knowledgeable and she's very artistic. So she's got a good eye for detail, for colour, and she knows where she wants to take the garden during, you know, hers and Richard's tenure.
Yeah.
And then we as the team support her in making that vision come true.
Yeah, well, it looks lovely. So we're looking at the wonderful house. If we turn around 180 degrees, one of the famous things about Newby are the double herbaceous borders, and they drop away from the house, don't they, down to the River Ure at the bottom. So that, are they reputed to be some of the longest in the UK?
They are, yes. So they're the longest double herbaceous borders in a private garden. So they run north-south, almost straight down the centre of the garden for 172 metres, and they're 4 metres deep. Split into 10 beds, 5 a side, and underwent a renovation 10 years ago now. And, you know, people sort of think about it. If you sort of think back about it, it was kind of almost revolutionary is not quite the right word, but people started to panic about it because they were so iconic, the old borders, and then Lucinda sort of took spade to them, dug the whole lot out, completely replanted it. Some people thought she was crazy, some people thought, you know, okay, this is quite groundbreaking, and actually the result was fantastic. It's a much more controlled colour palette, and it really draws the landscape around the borders into the borders themselves, and then the borders bounce back off of that landscape. So it works both ways, and actually as a set of borders, they're in quite a fine spot, really.
They are, aren't they? And they do look amazing. I mean, obviously, we're seeing them now, late November. There's sort of no flower in as such, but there's still a lot of structure there with a lot of the perennials in there. So what's the... Because there's a lot of plants in there. When do you actually start getting in there and cutting them down? Because you've obviously got a team of gardeners here. So when do you start to tackle your herbaceous borders?
So we have a rest up until Christmas, and then second or third week back in January is when we get in. We like to leave them as long as possible. It's great for the sort of birds, and there's lots of insects that sort of hide in the stems. The birds go crazy for the seeds of, you know, things like the Echinops. But then also, if you get a lovely frosty morning, the play of light and frost on the stems and the seed heads is fantastic. So we leave them as long as we can, but always in the back of our mind we think, right, we've got so long before we open again in spring. So we sort of draw a line middle to the end of January and we start working down. And it takes about 10 days a fortnight to cut down, weed through, if we're doing any mulching, if we're doing any sort of division of things that have maybe enjoyed the spot a little bit too much, you know, if we've got plants that have struggled and we're sort of moving things around and trying to edit them as best we can. Yeah. It takes about a fortnight, really. Okay. So quite a lot of work.
A lot of work, but not as long as I thought. You know, I thought you were going to be in there for months and months, but I suppose once you all get stuck into it as the team, you can crack on and get it done.
And I think when they were overhauled, there was a lot of time spent in eradicating the sort of pernicious weeds, and they're quite densely planted as well, so when things start to grow in the spring, actually the herbaceous muscles out of the weeds, yeah, mainly anyway, so yeah, there's very little. We do a bit of fluffing around the edges where there's a bit more light and the weeds get in, but generally they're pretty easy to maintain.
Yes, and I remember when they were changed 10 years ago and there was a lot of people saying, oh, you can't do that. But as you say, you know, Lucinda put them in, had this vision, and they are amazing borders. I think they're far better now because the colours work, as you say, and some really interesting plants. And you have splashes of extra colour with dahlias in there, don't you, that gives that late summer colour. So they are amazing. So anybody who's never been to Newby Hall, you must make a beeline for the herbaceous borders. Am I right in thinking you're also working on the rock garden as well?
I suppose we should be saying we're at the end of a 5-year restoration project. We've still got another 2 years to go, so we're overrunning. We started in 2019, the team started in 2019, and then I joined them in 2021. We're a little over halfway, and we've done the easy bit, because again, for people that haven't been to Newby, the bottom part of the garden floods. So the lower half of the rock garden over winter, at least twice, if not three times, goes under 2 metres of water.
Oh, wow. That's quite
deep. So we're down to...
You'd be okay. You'd be able to put your head above it, but I'd be well underwater.
So we're down to the challenging bit now. And we're hoping that we're making the right sort of decisions plant-wise. But it's a really exciting project. You know, the rock garden itself was... started in 1912, finished 1914. Then the gardeners went to France, went to war. Wasn't really gardened again in any sort of earnest until the 80s, early 90s. Right. And then it was a case of throwing in a few shrubs. Yeah. It wasn't a rock garden, you know, alpine style rock garden. And it wasn't until sort of 2019 that Lucinda was like, enough's enough. We need to do something with it. So we're working with the team at Kevok, up in Scotland, and they've done doing a redesign for us. So it's a really interesting project to be involved with, and actually adds so much more to the garden.
Absolutely. Are we allowed to have a look?
Yeah, let's go down.
Can we have a wander down?
Yeah.
So we'll have a wander down.
Oh, I'm looking forward to hearing about that rock garden. And there's a question about rock gardens from your trip this last week, isn't there, Martin?
Yes, that was one of the questions we got when we were up at Barnard Castle. So we'll hear that in a second or two.
We'll come to that in a moment. If you want to ask a question that we'll answer on the podcast, or if you're really, really lucky, we might even make a video about it, just send us an email, info@pottsandcharles.com, or drop a comment on one of our videos or something like that. I mean, there's all sorts of ways of getting in touch with people these days, aren't there? You know, we do Instagram, we do Facebook, we do, what's it called, X, Twitter. Actually,
I think that's what it is.
We also have Threads, we have Mastodon, we also have, there's something else, Blue Sky. Well, I've got a Blue Sky and I usually promote.
You're losing me now, Sean, you're losing me.
There's so many different ways to get in touch. But yeah, info@pottsandcharles is the easiest way. And I'll stop talking about that now.
Shall we have a question?
Shall we go to some of those questions?
Yeah, well, we've got one. This one is from Michael in Barnard Castle.
Imagine my rockery, about 60 feet long or more, 11 feet high, massive blocks of stone. I've just had over 20 trees removed. They've got too big for me to reach to prune them. And I'm starting to replant the rockery with stuff that will flower mainly in the autumn. Now, Japanese anemones are a favourite flower, but they spread like mad. Is there a Japanese anemone that is well behaved?
Good question. Some of them are, yes, because they've done some hybrid ones available now. And there's a really good one out called Frilly Knickers, which is a semi-double. Yes. And that one is a clump-forming one rather than the an enemy japonica that goes all over the place. Exactly. So if you look out for some of the hybrid ones, they will find that they're more clump forming than the old spreading ones. And I would go for some of the sedums as well. You know, the lovely sedums that have the autumn. They're great in the autumn.
Yes.
And some of the dwarf...
Not the ones that flop.
Not the ones, no. There are some really good dwarf ones. But you can do the Chelsea chop where, you know, in June,
yes.
shorten them and that thickens them out.
Yes.
And maybe some of the lovely, there's some quite low-growing asters, the Michaelmas daisies. So you'd get those lovely sort of warm autumn colours. And I think that would work. Wouldn't fall over. No, you want things that are fairly compact and sturdy. But I think it would look lovely.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So we've got a video about Rob Hardy's frilly knickers, haven't we? Which you can see if you want to.
Oh, that was Beaver Castle,
wasn't
it? The Beaver Castle flower show a year ago.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So look back on our YouTube Pots and Trowels channel, and you can find that there.
We'll try and put a link in the description. But yeah, go on.
Yeah. Good.
We will have to catch up with Rob at one of the shows in the summer, and we can have another look at his frilly knickers. They're actually his wife's frilly knickers. They're Rose's frilly knickers, and they are. It's a really good plant. It is. So I think we've got another question come in. We've got another one from Barnard Castle, haven't we? Got another one we can do first, Elizabeth.
Yeah, let's hear from Elizabeth.
We've moved in 4 weeks ago, and the place we bought is a barn conversion. And there used to be the army there in the Second World War, and there's an enormous concrete base that should have been for a building. Apparently there was fuel stored there on it, and our predecessors here have put a vegetable patch, raised bed on top of part of it, and the rest is covered with couch grass. And it's a big area. And I'm just want some inspiration as to what we can do with it.
Okay, and presumably you don't want to take this concrete up. That's too.
No, I don't think we can. It's big. I mean, it's
oh, I see. Yes, so it is a big area. Yeah. That's right. So is it this area with the gravel, or the gravel area? So it has got grass growing over it now.
That's what she's done with it. Looking at the house, there's this. She's put these raised beds up here, and you go through the soil and you hit concrete.
Okay.
And all that is concrete.
So underneath the lawn is concrete. What sort of depth of soil have you got? Do you know?
Only about 6 feet.
Right, so obviously enough there to grow the lawn, but not enough to grow trees and shrubs. I think the only way you can do it, really, is to almost have more raised beds in. Because if you're going to grow some dwarf shrubs and perennials in there, as well as the vegetables or fruit bushes, you're going to need at least sort of a foot of soil, a little bit more. So if you've already got 6 inches of soil, if you were to raise the beds by another foot, that would give you 18 inches of topsoil. And most things would grow perfectly well in that. Obviously, don't go anything for too deep rooting because it will struggle, but most roots will hit that concrete and spread out. And you might just need to make sure it's a good soil that retains the moisture.
Yes, I mean, round the edges there is soil. That's all right. That's part of the field. It's this pit.
I mean, I think other than take it up, you've got to come up and raise beds. But, you know, shrubs and trees, small trees, shrubs would grow perfectly well as long as it's got good soil. And you've got 18 inches of soil, they'll do okay.
Good. Okay, thank you very much.
At some point, I'm going to do some raised beds in our garden. I talk about it every year, but honestly, we need something like that because we've got a horrible area at the end of our garden, which I'm just about managing to grow grass in. But I think, fantastic advice for people in Barnard Castle whose eyes seem to be working very well. So that's good.
Exactly. And you know, the raised beds are good. It's exactly what we've done on our vegetable garden because the ground underneath was compacted. There was a load of rubble in it. There were big, big tree roots as thick as my arm. So we could never have dug it. So the only way was to come up. And, you know, we've come up 2 railway sleepers high, which is about 18 inches, 45 centimetres. And if you've got anything trees in there, they will still grow through down into the subsoil below. So they're not going to stop at the bottom of the raised bed as long as it's not concrete. So, yeah, good way to cope with problem situations like that.
Mm. Some of our good tree roots actually come up through the lawn. So, yeah, that would be great to hide those.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way to do it. The only downside is sometimes if you have got a lot of tree roots and you create a raised bed, they do actually grow up into the raised bed, so you just have to be aware of that. That can be a problem.
And they can take a lot of filling. You've got to think about that, because they need filling up with compost, don't they? So I know we took up some grass, didn't we, from another area, and we filled the bottom of them with the old turf.
Yeah.
And do they settle as well? Do they settle?
They do, yeah. It's amazing. Ours have settled probably 4 or 5 inches over the summer. So this winter we will top them up. And, you know, what you don't want to be doing is, if you can help it, don't buy bagged compost, because that's sort of a waste of a valuable resource that is used as a growing compost. So you can get the green waste from the local authorities, and you can often find people that sell bulk bags of topsoil with compost added in. So that's the most economical way to do it, and an environmentally friendly way as
well. Wander up and down the street asking to borrow their green bin for half an hour.
Well, exactly, yes. That's right.
Shall we go back to Newby Hall?
Okay. Wow, so these are some big, big pieces of rock in this rock garden. So where did it all come from?
Well, originally it's come down from Pateley Bridge, so up on the Yorkshire Dales, or the edge of the Yorkshire Dales, and, you know, some of them are quite sizeable. You know, there's some smaller pieces, but then there's some that, you know, are sort of 2-3 tonnes of rock. We think they got them down to Ripon and then onto the canal, and the canal joins into the River Yore, which forms the southern boundary of the garden, floated them downstream, and then somehow hauled them off and dragged them up into place here. And of course, you know, all done without JCBs and tractors.
What year did you say this was, roughly?
So started 1912, finished 1914.
Right. So it would have been
brute force and ignorance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and probably some horses involved and things. Exactly. So this part, you've done a lot of work in it, a lot of clearing, haven't you?
Yes. So if you imagine this was finished, and then essentially nothing was done for the best part of 100 years. If you remember right back at the beginning when I bumped into you, I was saying to you the garden as such didn't really start until the 20s and early 30s. So this really was out on a limb, and there was no garden between here and the house. So after the garden team was sort of revived after the war, their first attentions wasn't coming down here. It was then starting to build the new garden.
Yeah.
So then a load of self-seeded trees came in, loads of weeds, and then particularly the bit of the bottom that floods, you know, anything that wants to float down river can do.
Yeah.
So we end up with a lot of sort of riverside weeds growing in the lower half of the rock garden as well.
So if we just wander down through, in the rock garden there are some pretty big trees. So these would have all been when it was, you say, in the 70s more planting was done. So, because these are not the sort of thing you'd normally expect. You know, there's a big pice here that, I don't know, I can't see the top. Is it 50, 60 feet tall?
Yeah, so some of them we think are original to the actual, when the garden was built. So, you know, over 100 years ago. And then some may well have gone in later. And, you know, as you say, will have been planted as dwarf conifers, and many of us have seen rock gardens in the front of people's houses with not so dwarf conifers. It's exactly the same story here.
Yeah.
We've chosen to retain you know, what's left, we've chosen to retain. They've become part of the garden. Actually, they're forming quite a good wind protection for the rest of the garden. It's a very exposed site here, and we need to be very conscious about wind. So they're sheltering the wider garden, but also they add quite a lot of character. And we decided not to go for a complete restoration as new. So it's a reimagined space, really, which gives us much more freedom to be creative. You know, we're not creating an alpine landscape. We've got a mix of herbaceous woodland plants. Some trees and shrubs have gone in. Mm. And then we have got some alpine plants have gone in on the more open site. So actually, these amazing conifers that you can't see the top of a really sort of intrinsic part of the rock garden and its last 100-year story, really.
Yeah, I totally agree. If you took them all out, it would look very bare, wouldn't it? And it does add some character to it. And as you say, it creates different planting areas. It doesn't have to be purely alpine. You've got that dapple shade and woodlandy as well. So we're walking down into it. So there's a broad path walking down. We've got these huge boulders, sort of made a ravine, essentially, haven't they? You know how they did it. It would have been a huge feat to dig all this out. And then we've got like a little archway further down, so that opens up.
into the bottom of the garden. So when is the sort of, oh God, this is amazing where the tree roots have grown all between it from that conifer.
Yeah.
Special, isn't it?
And that's the other thing, you know. Okay, if we decided to take that tree out, what would we have done? Because there's no way you could get the stump out to create a planting space without destroying, you know, what you're trying to restore. But now we get to enjoy this amazing root structure, and it adds that extra character as well. You've got the roots wrapping around the rocks, and rather than it just being, you know, any old rock garden, it's something different and unique to here.
Yeah. Yes, so we've got an archway, and we're sort of in the lower part of it now. I didn't realise it was as big as this. It's a few years since I've actually been into the rock garden, to be fair. And it is big, isn't it? It covers a huge area.
It does. It's about 1,200 square metres, right, which is quite large.
Yeah.
And actually, if you sort of piece it all together and stretch it out, it's about the same footprint as the double borders.
Right.
So it's a huge space. It's just because it's a different arrangement, you know, it's broadly rectangular, you can't see all of it in one go, you sort of lose your sense of scale because you kind of get lost in it, really. But if you flatten it all out and make it a long thin rectangle, you know, it's essentially the same as those iconic borders.
Yeah, and then we're coming out to, and this is the lower part where presumably the river floods the bottom part of the garden, isn't it? So
exactly, we've got a sort of central dividing path, and everything on the riverside of that path in a high flood goes underwater for, usually it's only sort of 24, 48 hours, so it's very quick. It doesn't stay saturated for very long, so we're quite lucky in that respect. But it's all of the detritus that comes with it, bits of plastic and shopping trolley.
The river that comes down through Wensleydale, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's everything that's coming down from the Dales, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a huge catchment, and it doesn't take much rain upstream to suddenly put the river at capacity and then overfilling the banks. And then, of course, just upstream is Ripon. You know, quite rightly, they've put in loads of flood defences to protect the city, but that moves the water down even quicker to us.
Yeah, okay. Before I let you get back to the guys, I see they've, sounds like they've stopped blowing. There must be a coffee break or tea break or something. You've recently been to Nepal, haven't you, on a bit of an expedition. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so that, I mean, is completely connected to the rock garden, and Lucinda and I were very kindly invited by the team from Kevok, who were, you know, working with us on the restoration, to go and look at alpine plants in the wild. So there was a group of us that headed over there in October, and it was fantastic. You know, we started sort of subtropical and then trekked up to the base camp of the second highest mountain in Nepal, and sort of went through, you know, subtropical forest into temperate forest, then out into sort of the scrubby, the edge of sort of the alpine zone, then up into the alpines, and then basically to the point where the plants run out and the snow starts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So really fantastic experience. And then, you know, as a result of that, we've got loads of ideas of things that we can do with the rock garden, because we've seen some of the plants we've got here growing in the wild.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, it makes it all more real, doesn't it? Exactly. Well, thank you for this little tour. It's been lovely, because I've never seen the garden at this time of the year, so I feel very privileged to have been able to climb over that fence and get in. I hope I can get out. For anybody wanting to visit in the future, when does Newby open, and how can they find out more information, Lawrence?
So this year we are closed until Good Friday of 2024, and then we'll be reopen. The best thing is for people to check the website, because we have varying opening times and days throughout the season. But we're open every weekend once we open, but during the week it's best to refer to the website. And then we're open all the way through from, essentially this year it's the end of March, all the way through until the end of September.
Okay, yeah, that's good. And there's also social media, people can follow you on social
media.
Exactly,
so we're on all the usual Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And we've got a website, obviously, as well.
That's great. And we mustn't forget to mention that in September, you also host the Harrogate Flower Show here.
We do. We're very lucky. I mean, this is what we've just done
the third one. Yeah.
So with the fourth one this coming September, and it's a great venue. It's a really great day out, really good value. You've got the show, you've got the house, the amazing decorations, floral decorations in the house, and the garden as well, all rolled into one day.
So. And you, because we get you on the stage doing Q&As. So exactly. So that's one to put in your diary in September. Thank you very much. We'll come back in the summer and see it when it's all in flower. We've got a real flyover now, which is right on cue. So, Lawrence, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's really good of them to organise a fly pass in your honour, Martin. I think, you know, only honoured guests get that, even ones who climb over the fence.
It took a little bit of arranging to get the red arrows to fly over, but, you know, I've got a little bit of influence. But no, lovely garden. As Lawrence said, it's closed at the moment, but if it's one you've not been to, put it on your list for next summer, because it is a super garden, and the house as well.
And fantastic for children as well, because they've got an adventure playground, they've got a dancing water play area, so it's not just about, you know, I mean, obviously it is in the gardens, and those areas are set in the gardens.
And a train.
And a train,
they've got
yes.
a miniature train that
like
goes
Belton
around
house
the garden.
Belton House has all that stuff.
Yeah, it, yes, it's yeah. And of course it's privately owned, which I think is great. It's a really wonderful place to visit.
Mm. I'm just thinking of that amazing trip he's done to Nepal to find alpines in the wild.
Fabulous.
I am, you know, talk about naive, I assumed alpines were in the Alps, but obviously it's just a generic term for things that grow up high. But wow, to go to Nepal.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that was it. It was chatting afterwards to us, and he was saying, you know, down low it was really warm and tropical, and it's when you get above a certain height then it's cold and the air's thin, so it's quite difficult to breathe, you get problems with altitude sickness, so it's once in a lifetime, and I think he'd certainly do it again. I think he's got the travelling bug.
Wow.
As our Lawrence. Well, very interesting young man.
There was an old fact I learned, and it could be completely wrong, but I remember hearing that it drops a degree Celsius centigrade every 100 metres you go up. So you go up a kilometre, it's going to drop 10 degrees. You go up 2 kilometres, it's 20 degrees lower. So there you go. Again, not necessarily a true fact. Please do research that before you use that for planning any tropical or alpine expeditions.
I mean, it is going to be looking fabulous at Nubi, because Lawrence mentioned when it's a frosty morning, all those herbaceous perennials that they've left in there, the seed heads, it's going to look really structural, isn't it? And I know even in our garden, we've had a couple of frosts, and some of the grasses and the hydrangea heads are looking gorgeous, aren't they?
They are.
But obviously the frosty weather brings some problems as well, Martin.
Well, it does, yeah. But it just shows how quickly it changes, because we recorded with Lawrence last week and it was quite mild when we were there. And then all of a sudden, the weather for us, certainly in the UK, the last 4 or 5 nights have been really frosty, you know, minus twos and threes in our garden. It can bring problems, you're right, especially when we've had a mild period, because we get lulled into this false sense of security thinking that winter's not coming, and then all of a sudden, wham bam, it's there. So certainly if you've got outdoor taps or anything like that, make sure that they are insulated. That reminds me, we haven't done
got
the one outside
hours.
The back window. Exactly.
Do what he says, not what he does. Yeah.
We've got a little polystyrene thing, or you can use newspaper and tape. Just make sure it doesn't freeze.
They're really cheap to buy, aren't they?
Are.
Those little polystyrene things.
And also, if you've still got the odd plant that's on borderline tender outside in a container that you've been just getting that last little bit of colour and interest out of into sort of winter, make sure that you protect it. I mean, ideally, it wants to be taken now somewhere frost-free where it's not going to be damaged by the cold weather.
But does it need the light? Because not everybody's got a greenhouse that they can keep frost-free. So if you were going to put it in your garage, would that work with things if it's going to be in the dark?
It depends what it is. I mean, if it's plant that's going to stay in leaf, you know, like a pelargonium, then you would want to try and give it some light if possible, but it only just needs frost protection, so you know, maybe a garage or a shed where there's a light source coming in would be fine. Things like fuchsias, you know, you can cut them quite hard back, and as long as you keep them on the dryish side, not too wet in the compost, and above freezing, they're okay. I mean, fleece is great. In our greenhouse, we've got a heated bench. It's a biggish greenhouse, and it would cost a fortune to heat. So I'm being a bit mean this year with the cost of electricity and everything. So we've got a heated bench. So anything that is tender, I stand on the bench. So it's only just a few degrees coming up, and then I cover them over with fleece on frosty nights. And I put a maximum minimum thermometer underneath, and it will keep them just above freezing, even when the outside temperature is -2 or -3. So it is worth fleecing things over. But yes, even if it's something that you only temporarily put in a shed for a few days while it's frosty and then lift it out,
oh, okay.
That will give it that little bit of protection.
Yeah.
I actually ran into somebody yesterday who asked a question about cyclamen, because we had a forecast down to potentially -5 today. And Emma from Derby has some cyclamen. They're in the ground and they're flowering now. Are they going to survive? That was her question.
Yes. Now, it depends what they are, because, you know, we've got cyclamen coombe, which are hardy. They don't flower usually till February. And then we've got cyclamen heterifolium. They are usually September, October flowering. Again, both of those are totally hardy. So you can plant them in the garden. They will naturalise in dapple shade. But if it's in flower now in the garden, I would suspect it's one of the sort of houseplant cyclamen, one of the little miniature ones you buy in pots from a garden centre to put in pots and displays. People do put them in the garden as well. And they, although they're fairly tough, they aren't hardy and they will stand it down to freezing. But I think once we get below freezing, they're going to be damaged. So I suspect that's probably what she's got. So it may be you'll find that you'll wake up in the morning after a very frosty night and find that they're actually being scorched and tinged. So probably not good news there.
No, sounds like it. Well, no, she gets to go and buy some more plants, right? So I suppose that's a plus side to everything. Another question came in and it was about compost bins. How often should they be turned? So this is from Andrea. Thank you, Andrea. It's a wooden slatted RHS compost bin. How often or when should she turn it?
Right, OK. Well, I do like to turn it. Some people say don't turn it, just fill it and leave it. But I like to mix, because you put in different things in. Sometimes you put in dry leaves in, sometimes it's wet grass cuttings, and you finish up with layers and it doesn't rot particularly well. So I do like to get the fork in occasionally and give it a mix. Not so much at this time of the year, more when the weather's warmer, because if you're mixing it now, you're getting cold air in. And the whole idea about getting this garden waste to break down into lovely friable compost is to get the heat there. You need the heat to get the bacteria working.
But it's a slatted compost bin.
Well, it's going to be cooler anyway because of that. But I certainly probably wouldn't be doing it now, Andrea. I would fill it now, probably mix it a bit before you put it in. If you've got dry and wet ingredients, mix it in, firm it down a little bit. But then come spring, when it starts to warm up, you could then give it a good old mix. You're smiling at me, Mrs. Fish.
No, because I just know when you do ours, because we've got one of these hot boxes, which is quite big. So we have to put a tarpaulin down. It all has to get shoveled out onto the tarpaulin. And then you mix it all up and then you put it all back
in,
don't you?
Yes.
So it's quite a big job.
Well, it is. But
so if you can get away with not doing it, or you just do it in situ.
If it's a smaller bin, you don't normally need to take it out and put it back in. You can get your fork and just push it down and mix it and stir. As if you're mixing one of your cake mixes.
I hope it doesn't look like that.
But we get a lot of questions about your compost bin. It's a prototype one, isn't it? Was it just a tester? Is it?
Yeah.
Is something people
It was. It was before hot boxes became a thing, really, and somebody had a go at inventing one.
Yeah.
But it is quite big and industrial looking, isn't it?
I'm wondering if you could put your tender plants on top of it and then, you know, the warmth from it.
Well, you know, if you'd got it in a greenhouse, I mean, I know somebody that actually puts quite a tall, slender one in a greenhouse. They just get quite warm in there, and they just take the lid off on a frosty night, and it just gives off that little bit of heat.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know, it won't warm a greenhouse, but it will probably ward the frost off, definitely. So you've got to try all these things
and
in these hard times.
And you can cook your jacket potatoes in the middle of
it. Well, do that in the summer.
We need to try that.
There's the cooking tip for the week.
So, yes, that's it. Dry hot potatoes in a compost heap.
Absolutely.
I might wrap them in tin foil first.
Well, thanks, everyone, for listening this week. Remember, ask us questions if you want to. info@potsandtrowels.com. I slowed down there, didn't I? But I do know it is info@potsandtrowels.com. And, trying to think about what our video is about this week's. But planting bare root roses, that's available now if you want to go over to YouTube.
Yes. And we haven't filmed the one for next Thursday yet because we are waiting to see what's happening in the garden. So we will be doing another video that will be out Thursday doing something practical in the garden. And I think next week on our podcast, we've got a few more questions. We're actually going to be out and about again up in North Yorkshire talking to a gardening group, and I'm going to chat to an old friend of mine, Sarah Hopps, and we're going to answer some questions at the gardening group.
We'll see you then. Watch the videos on YouTube or Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter or X, and subscribe to the podcast and never miss a thing. For more information, go to potsandtrowels.com.